Ready for the show? I'm ready to start.
10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11. Tower cleared.
Roger.
Well, greetings, my dear friends from all over the world. This is Martin Horst speaking on BBS Radio Station 1, Finding Voices Radio, intergalactic radio station. We are all connected. We are the star seeds. We are the liberators of planet Earth. Donald Nielsen, Douglas Nielsen, Okesh from Romania, Martin Horst from the Netherlands, and all the other lightworkers that are listening in from different places in the world. Welcome to ET First Contact Radio. I do have, as I told you, my guest and friend, Okesh. And I had the pleasure and the privilege to meet Okesh in Brasov, in Romania, in the Carpathians, the Carpathians. Welcome to the Carpathians. And the Carpathians are beautiful. It's a beautiful area. And I miss the area and I miss my friends there. And I also met Siriat, a very special gentleman as well. So, Okesh. Yes, welcome here on this beautiful evening in the Achterkerk in the Netherlands, and I want to heartfully welcome you to the show. So, Okesh, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okesh, what have you recently seen in the etheric chronovisor?
From the mothership Panache, you mean? Well,
yeah, where I interviewed you about last year, about Comet Eisen and the event, and also you have published a new video, the Etheric Chronovisor and the, how do you pronounce it, perpendicular spaceship, or rentacular, it's a difficult word. Can you say what is the name of your latest documentary, Okesh?
Lenticular spacecraft. Mm-hmm. The lenticular. Yes, it's not so difficult word, but anyway, it's less usual than the others. So,
yes.
First, I'd say we have to understand that the etheric chronovisor is not like a magic mirror or a crystal ball. I'd say it is a piece of high technology from the etheric plane, which allows us to see some images, and of course much, much more than that. And it allows also things to be perceived through the other senses. It allows access to some very intelligent summaries of problems, situations, historical moments and facts. And it can also calculate the very complex astrophysical reality at the confluence between the physical and etheric plane, because it identifies the dimensional portals utilized by the mothership or other Sirian ships for their moving. There are probably thousands of such chronovisors in the etheric part of the ship. But obviously we haven't seen but a part of them. Well, recently we focused our attention on certain scientific data, which we want to present in the Galactus Mysteries series. For example, we in particularly investigate aspects connected to Heisenberg's uncertainty in quantum mechanics, about the way it is understood by modern science and what it really represents. This is what we're interested in at the present, I'd say. Hello, Martin?
Okay. Yeah, that's very fascinating. Now I want to move on to the next question. What other functions does a chronovisor have, Alkesh?
Pretty much that which I have mentioned already. The interaction with it is very complex because it is a kind of empathetic transmission, I'd say. In so much as that you ask clearly with your senses and thoughts to be seen and known by you, the chronovisor makes it appear and you feel it with all the five senses. So there are three levels of guidance, like a control panel. However, it is necessary to learn how to use it, and this takes some time, but mainly it is like a process of interactive emanation between the being and the chronovisor. And this is the whole process. Hello?
Okay. Yes, I'm here.
You can hear me?
Yes, perfectly clear. Okay.
Okay.
So, as I can resume, are the consoles of the etheric chronovisor are organic?
No. The consoles are not organic. They are made up of etheric material and are energetically connected to information in superior, subtle planes, such as astral, mental, and causal, but it is not organic. In the physical plane, for example, people are used to the fact that everything they do can be touched with fingers or hands. But in the etheric plane, when you are in front of a chronovisor, only a part of these actions correspond to the movement of the fingers. The rest are subtle energetic interactions of an emotive and mental nature.
Right, that makes it clear for me. Okay, thank you.
For example, you cannot start the chronovisor if you are not very focused, or if there is not a powerful energetic resonance between you and what you want to find out. I mean, it is not enough to just be curious. The connection and the interaction with the chronovisor, I mean, is complex, and this is the case with its commands as well.
Mm-hmm.
Not only
The information you get from the chronovisor is not about trivial things like a police case on planet Earth or something unimportant, but rather cosmic information, correct?
Generally speaking, what appears on the screen is a necessity for your being. However, indeed, one cannot expect everything to be handed over on a plate if one has not understood correctly the way an etheric chronovisor works. You know what I mean?
Right.
Working with the etheric chronovisor is a complex experience by itself, a connection to the entire ship. It is not a mechanical or routine action. Mm-hmm. And because of this, you cannot visualize or understand just any information. Mm-hmm. But only that information which the being in front of the chronovisor resonates with, or I don't know, is capable of understanding. Images, mm-hmm. Images, you know, either do not appear, are blurred, or are not understood.
Mm-hmm.
So the chronovisor. In this way, it responds to your emotions and inner states.
Mm-hmm.
And visual elements, specific states, emotions relating to the subject that interests us,
mm-hmm.
are intelligently presented as a summary.
Mm-hmm.
So, to put it bluntly, the device always shows the areas of interest and resonance with our own being.
Mm-hmm.
And these elements appear more luminous than the other, and even sometimes are very bright, showing that there is a major area of interest for the one who is searching. You know,
mm-hmm.
an important point of resonance was created between them and those images from the Akashic records. And
mm-hmm.
this understanding is not only visual, but also it is emotive, mental, and even causal. Therefore, I'd say viewing the images on the chronovisor screen is a complex operation,
mm-hmm.
and does not represent an automatic act in any way. You know.
Yeah, that answers the question to my. Question that I wanted to ask: what about the way in which you start using the chronovisor? Because I understand that you have to be focused. But how does the chronovisor know that you wish to see effectively?
Indeed. When you place your hands on the console, and you are very focused on the subject you are interested in.
Mm-hmm.
It automatically produces a subtle energetic interaction between you and the chronovisor, and it firstly presents general information and images about that subject. However, mm-hmm. when information is requested, we need to be very attentive to the way we ask for this information.
Mm-hmm.
An aspect which also is obtained in time through experience.
Mm-hmm.
The same subject, if it is requested differently, can lead to different answers from the chronovisor. We realized that it is based on the necessity of that information for our spiritual evolution and for the mission we have on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Syrians, they take into consideration the highest degree of the spiritual evolution of humanity and its ascension, so
mm-hmm.
so that everything passes through this filter from their part and is related to it. And this requires not only great responsibility, you know, but also attention and humbleness, I'd say.
Yes, indeed. Yes. So you probably searched for a great deal of information in many directions, and you probably know the answers to many mysteries and historic questions. And are you going to reveal it to us in the series about the true origin of man?
Well, indeed, there are quite many things which we have discovered up until now. However, it should be understood that we do not have pretensions that we know everything or find out everything through the chronovisor. There is a limit to the information dictated in particular by the necessity of that information, as I said. And the Syrians always act according to necessity, which is actually expression of resonance. For example, we cannot come and ask for information just because we are curious about one thing or another. Simple curiosity without any emotional involvement or without a direct connection with our being is a selfish manifestation, and it is not satisfied. And if this happens, you know, there is silence. A deep silence, and the screen is empty. So it's all about necessity.
And yes. Spiritual.
Yeah.
So I would like to move on to the next question, Alkesh.
Yes.
Because of the time issue. Do we have emotions? Why do we have emotions? And what is the purpose to relive them?
I think human nature, even the DNA structure of the being, causes us to have emotions, and even extremely varied and powerful emotions. Our astral body is developed and very active, you know. For example, there are civilizations that practically have no emotions. As you know it, I think. Such as the civilization of the Little Greys. This really is a serious problem for them and represents a great hole in their evolution as a species. But the emotional side of the human being, I think, is, however, something rarely encountered in the universe.
Is this why there's so much interest from other civilizations for us, because we have emotions?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to say. Because because beings from other worlds in the cosmos experience emotions, even intensely. However, they are not contained with a certain range of experiences which remain relatively constant, for example, love. But for mankind is different, however. They may love intensely and minute later enter into terrible jealousy, for example. In a moment being calm and good-natured, I'd say, a second later hearing some news, becoming very agitated and upset. You see, the range of emotional and mental experiences is very vast and nuanced when it comes for the humankind. Because of this, among other things, I think we attract the attention of many extraterrestrial civilizations, as you said, due to the extraordinary complexity of our DNA. But, however, it is necessary, I think it is necessary to clarify things. For example, it is good for our evolution to experience only positive and pleasant emotions. Negative emotions are deeply destructive and at both the physical and subtle level. Because of this, it is good to experience again and again, more and more intensely, all that is good and beautiful, all that is elevating and noble, because these elevated emotions harmonize the entire being. balancing us psychically and mentally, activating in our structures the inner areas of profoundly beneficial energy. So everything that is bad is transformed if the intention is beneficial, powerful, and perseverant. And that's the purpose of, or to remove the emotions.
Yes, because perseverance furthers in human evolution.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's talk about this totally other subject. Let's talk about the Mantuk project and the Looking Glass project. Now, I want to know what Russia and Iran have accomplished regarding time travel.
You have changed entirely the subject.
Yeah. I want to cover as many interesting things in this hour as possible.
Okay, no problem.
Let's keep the topic interesting.
Yeah, indeed. Now, the projects you mentioned belong to the Americans. Mm-hmm. The technology used by each one is different, however, because mm-hmm. the Montauk project is based, as you know, especially on a massive use of electricity. Mm-hmm. Many times, the small town of Montauk remained without electricity when the experiments started at the military base. It also used a special chair and a special interface, and it created a material tunnel over a distance of a few meters, if I remember well, at the boundary between the physical and etheric plane. Mm-hmm. Sufficient, however, to send, so to say, the subject where they desired in time. But in the Looking Glass project, mm-hmm. so-called time travel was based on another principle. The device consists, as I know, of a container surrounded by at least two rows of magnets, which rotate at a certain speed and at precise angles. A gas is then injected into the container. Some say this is argon. And images from the future appear like a hologram in the gas inside the container. It is not clear if they also succeeded in moving the mass through time in this project. I don't know it precisely. Some say yes, some say no. Mm-hmm. But if we are referring to Russia, well, it is almost certain that the Russians have their own time travel projects, especially mm-hmm. the famous, the famous Nazi bell, so-called Nazi bell, which is said to have been a source of an altered space-time continuum, but also a source of free energy that also passed through Russia. Who knows how long has it been there? And better yet, what did they use it for? In fact, there were two such bells, Nazi bells, one which appears to have arrived in the USA, the other has disappeared. This is the information I have. Iran also, as far as I know, has its own remarkable inventors, a very young one, mm-hmm. a genius in matter, who is said to have invented such a time-traveling machine that allows future events to be seen a certain number of years with a very high probability factor. Anyway, this is the situation regarding the time travel issue in these countries, as far as I know it.
Okay, well, very interesting. And now I move on to another subject, completely different.
Again? Platonic,
again.
Yeah.
Plato has always inspired me with his sacred geometry. And I saw, in a vision I had when I was 15, I saw the universe being a pentagon dodecahedron. And that's a pentagon dodecahedron are five, let's say isosceles pentagons.
Sacred solids, indeed.
There are 12 of them in a dodecahedron, because dodeca is 12 in Greek.
Yes.
Deca is 10, undeca is 11, and dodeca is 12.
Indeed.
And it's the opposite of the icosahedron, because icosa is 20, and icosahedron fits in a pentagon dodecahedron, and opposite. And you can also fit a hexagon, which is a cube, into it, and you can fit a Kepler star, which is a Merkaba, into it, or an octahedron, which is 8. You can play around with it. It's very interesting. But what about the node?
It's all about sacred geometry, indeed.
Sacred geometry. In the cosmos, there are platonic bodies in the microcosmos and in the macrocosmos. Now, in the film, you talked about the pentagon dodecahedron, and the symbol of the pentagon dodecahedron is ether. It's the highest form.
Yes.
How do we interact with sacred geometry? That's what I want to know.
Ah, it's a very profound interaction, you know, which manifests in a small and large scale. From a certain point of view, I say sacred geometry is the basis of the universe. If this order did not exist, everything would be chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
And many scientists understand this.
Mm-hmm.
For example, they realized the golden number, you know, phi is the golden number, which is approximately 1.618. And
Do you know that pi is 22 divided by 7?
Indeed.
Yeah.
And its fundamental importance in proportions. They know about it, and they know about the importance of this proportion practically in the whole of nature, in every area, architecture, in art, in construction, development, everywhere.
And for example, the mothership Anesh, and other ships from the galactics, are their propulsion systems, their engines,
Always using
sacred geometry?
Yes. All the more they start from directly from, I mean, their construction starts directly from the causal plane. And we will explain this in detail in our Terra Galactica series, starting with episode 2.
I can't wait.
Anyway, about sacred geometry, Drumvalo Melchizedek, I don't know if you heard about him.
Yes, I read all his books.
A very wise person. Described the essential importance of sacred geometry. He wrote a very good book, The Flower of Life.
I have it.
Yes, you know about it. In the same way, the platonic solids specifically act in the time-space continuum. So they are sacred. I mean, these platonic solids, they are sacred because they create certain beneficial resonances. And because they are the only five polygons that can fit us in a sphere, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, all this is connected also to the, if we say everything, we can say that they are connected also to the Fibonacci series.
Yes.
Which creates, you know, the spiral of universal evolution, so to say. You know, the Fibonacci series, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, then 13, where every number is the sum of the previous two, you know.
Yes, so, it's a progression.
It's a kind of progression, yes. a very special one. And there is much we could say anyway about this, but I'll stop here, I think.
Okay. Now, I'm very interested about the spaceship Anesh, the mothership. How close to Earth is it right now?
How close to the Earth is Anesh now? Honestly, I don't know. When we make contact with the Sirians, the etheric or astral projections are done directly into the interior of the ship. Mm-hmm. It changes, the mothership itself changes, however, positions sometimes in relation to the Earth. Mm-hmm. And as far as we know, after the completion of the repairs in the affected areas during the conflict in space, they moved it alongside the sun in order to charge it with plasma. But we don't know any other info about the subject up till now.
Okay. Now, what I want to know as well, and the listeners also, when is the spaceship, the mothership Anesh, going to be connected to our internet that we will have Galactis, our earthly internet connected to the galactic internet? When?
We don't know. We don't know, but we were told that this will happen, and we even gave a general description how it will be, according to what we were shown. Probably it will be after the connections of humanity with the lenticular spacecraft you have asked about have been increased, because it will create a threshold, so to say, with a superior resonance, which will allow a superior understanding of the cosmic reality that surrounds us. And that will be the moment, the specific moment.
I'm very interested in this. Okay, now back to the chronovisor, the etheric chronovisor.
Now we are back to chronovisor, indeed. Okay.
Okay. Do it's other non-human...
It's a kind of slalom, yes.
Yes, it's very interesting. Okay, so do other non-human races also use devices like the etheric chronovisor?
Non-human. Non-human races.
Extraterrestrials.
Generally speaking, the technologies of the extraterrestrial races are different, because the characteristics of these races are different. Mm-hmm. And their DNA is different, the planes of existence are different, and the technological resources are different. Non-human races, and we are speaking here only of those which are benevolent, have their ways of traveling through time and space. However, we have not seen representatives of such non-human races on the mothership Anesh. Everything we saw, and every time we've been there, was about only human races.
Humanoid.
Humanoid races, indeed.
Okay, now I want to ask you about those beings. Can they change the past or future timelines with the etheric chronovisor?
No, this is not possible. The chronovisor is in the etheric plane, and thus it cannot act in the physical plane to obtain different result in time. You can see, you can feel, but you cannot influence. For this, there needs to be a temporal movement of the mass, and this can be done, however, in the causal plane, but not with the chronovisor, with the etheric chronovisor.
Because there are different planes of consciousness. Now, as I understand from your teachings, that the causal plane is the highest. Can you describe the causal plane?
Wow. This is a little bit more complicated. You cannot describe a plane or dimension of the existence of manifestation if you do not know to a large extent the structure of the whole of creation in order to see where those dimensions are contained. I mean, you have asked for some explanations about the causal plane now, specifically for the causal plane. But we, as human beings with a material body that exists in the physical plane, we find ourselves very far away as a vibrational frequency from that plane. It is important, I think, to highlight that our being does not only exist in the physical dimension. Mm-hmm. Because when we speak about dimensions, well, I'm referring to space mainly, mm-hmm. which has various characteristics for every dimension. Mm-hmm. Dimensions, space, or planes of existence are interchangeable names. When we refer to a universe of manifestation, either mm-hmm. physical or astral, mm-hmm. and so on. For example, the plane, dimension, or physical universe in which we exist is called 3D, because the spaces which it corresponds to have three spatial dimensions. Mm-hmm. The other planes or dimensions of existence are known as parallel planes of physical dimensions. They mm-hmm. exist simultaneously with the physical plane in which we are in, but on different frequencies. So their names are adopted through a kind of convention in the West. And to a certain degree, certain connections can be made also to the names of the planes of existence in the Oriental tradition, in particular for the first of them. But from the astral plane and above, it already becomes complicated. And the majority of people are conscious only of their existence in the physical plane. The dimension immediately above the physical plane is the etheric dimension. Mm-hmm. Our being exists simultaneously in this dimension also. I mean, etheric space. Mm-hmm. And you can become conscious of this space in certain energetic conditions. Then there is the astral space or plane, which is the space above the etheric space or plane. Mm-hmm. The astral space is more complex, however, because it contains many so-called subspaces or subplanes of manifestation. Then, in the increasing order of vibrational frequency, is the mental dimension of manifestation, which is the universe of ideas and thoughts. Parallel with these dimensions of existence, and now you see why I wanted to present all this structure in a synthetic way. So, parallel with these dimensions of existence but superior in vibrational frequency is the causal plane, which you asked about. Inside of it, there are also certain dimensions with specific vibrational frequencies, mm-hmm. as in the case of the other planes. And in all these spaces or dimensions, time is specifically modulated. And general, mm-hmm. and generally speaking, it appears by referring to the time we perceive in the physical plane in which we exist passing quicker.
Mm-hmm.
There is, I say, there is probably confusion about the naming of this plane of existence, especially as in the esoteric and spiritual traditions, it speaks also about the causal body of the human being.
Mm-hmm.
You know the tradition. You know,
yes,
you
heard
it. Yes.
I know about it via Buddhism and the Vedic tradition and the
Indeed.
Yoga tradition and the shamans from South America, the Inca,
yes.
and the descendants from them, like the Queros and the Apus and the... and of course the Mayans and the North American Indians, they are, and the Aboriginals, they all know this.
Yes, and they explained it quite well. The causal bodies...
Yes?
What? You wanted to say something?
I wanted to say that in the West, or, well, the modern society, people forgot about it, and you are one of the great teachers, Alkesh, that has brought back this information, so... I think it's very, how do you describe that? I'm looking for the word. I think it's very important that we have teachers like you that can bring this information back to the bigger public on the internet via the movies you do and via the interviews we do.
Oh, thank you very much, Martin. If only people will understand it. I'm not sure I have explained it very clearly, but I do hope that it will be for good for everybody.
Yes, so, well, for me it's very clear, and I think you gave a very specific description of the existence of the astral, etherical, mental and causal planes, and that they also belong to our own being.
Yeah, the causal plane being the highest of all. I mean, with the finest, with the highest frequency of vibration, you know. And actually, it's a very name. Comes to differentiate it from the coarse physical and. From the subtle etheric, astral, and mental bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So, only few human beings, I'd say, are conscious of the existence of their subtle bodies, and even fewer of their causal body, which, as I said, has a very elevated vibrational frequency. However, I say this is expressed in particular by pure and elevated thoughts. I mean the causal body of the human
mm-hmm.
being. It is also manifesting, for example, during meditation of profound analysis or during introspection. If the spiritual preparation is suitable, you can become conscious of your causal body during deep, dreamless sleep because the individual consciousness moves, it can be said, into the causal body. So
yeah, which
brief,
is very
this is, yeah.
That's a very profound way of meditation.
Indeed.
Yes. Now, it's maybe a strange question, but if you compare the etheric plane to the physical plane,
yes.
Are there any boundaries?
Yeah, they're very close. Yeah.
Sorry?
They are very close. They're frequency of vibration is not so much departed.
So there are no boundaries in the etheric plane?
Yes, the frequency of vibration, it's pretty much closed, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Now, before I move on to the last question, let's speak about the event.
Now, about the event?
You know that I heard rumors from the United States that key figures like Bill Gates are now closely to be arrested. Now, I remember from your beautiful movie, the comet Eisen that is triggering the event when it flew to the sun. And, of course, it's a very complex process to liberate planet Earth. And the event cannot just happen. There needs to be a lot of things need to be prepared in a proper way by all the spiritual hierarchies and the different galactic civilizations, the benevolent extraterrestrials that are helping the event to manifest.
Yes.
Now, what is the current status of the event?
Well, you know that we cannot know about it like that. I mean, we cannot say that it will happen, it will be triggered tomorrow or the day after tomorrow. We can only appreciate or not appreciate, we can only make any assumptions about the time it will come or the gate through which it will come. Comparing different events, states of consciousness and facts on our planets, but no more, we cannot say precisely here is the event, we'll have it in a few hours or in a couple of days. So if you ask me personally, I cannot give you a precise answer, but what can be said, however, is that we are on the verge of a great transformation. And people knows about it for a long time, for some couples of years from now on. But if we observe attentively the actual events which take place right now on the surface of our planet, we can start to have some ideas and to make some judgments about the future line of the events, because it seems, as many say, that the things are very near. Not specifically, I'd say, concerning the event, but with the beginning, with the much awaited start of the transformation, of the big transformation of the humankind.
Yes, I can feel that in all my senses. Now, the last question, Alkesh, for this interview. What is your wish for humanity, my friend?
My wish for humanity. First of all, I would like humanity to change its current perspective of seeing things and give up the dogmatic and materialistic scientific vision. And with this, the capacity to love would grow considerably, I'd say. Our brothers in the cosmos are ready to help us and even do so in many ways that are not known to the majority of people. However, in order to have true access to the amazing worlds of the cosmos and civilizations that exist there, I think it is necessary that we understand ourselves much better and in more depth. And this means evolving spiritually. And I'm sure this is a wish that will be fulfilled. And that would be all.
That's beautiful, Alkesh. That's really beautiful. Now, I just want to tell the listeners that I was very much looking forward to this interview with Alkesh. And as I told you, I have attended a Galactus conference in Brasov, in Romania, which was an experience of my life. And Alkesh and I and Siriat have met in friendship. And I hope, Alkesh, that we can meet again in the future. Yes, and you are always welcome to visit me in the Netherlands whenever you have an event. And maybe we can organize a Galactus conference here in the Netherlands where you will be speaking to a large audience.
Yeah.
That's great.
Let's hope that this will be soon.
Yes. And for now, I want to thank Donald for this broadcast to make it possible. And if you are listening to BBS Radio, please continue, because there are many interesting programs ahead for tonight. And I want to thank all my sweet listeners from all over the world and the cosmos, because I know that people are listening in from other dimensions, and you also know that, Alkesh, and Dan knows that from BBS. And I also want to thank Jeroen for allowing us to broadcast on Finding Forces Radio. And be well, my friends, and be prepared for an amazing and beautiful transformation. And know that the future is bright. Thank you, everybody.